Now she intended to use it.
Honorable members of the Senate,
Lady Carice began, looking out on the enormous expanse of the chamber.
Only 3 weeks have passed since the glorious ceremonies marking the dedication of the statue of Bail Organa.
This was greeted with a smattering of applause, snaps, and whistles, the various audience approval of every species. Lady Carice smiled.
The late Viceroy of Alderaan helped to forge an alliance that brought hundreds of worlds together. The unity he inspired in others reminded us of the potential for even greater cooperation within the galaxy. When we looked up at his face, carved in stone, we remembered how much can be accomplished by one individual who inspires others. Although it pains me to say it, I must add that the Senate has not been as effective in Mon Mothma's absence, and that her successors in the office of Chancellor have failed to match her ability to create consensus. Now, the New Republic is beginning to suffer for it. Growing lawlessness is only one symptom of this malaise. There are others, and more will develop the longer we allow this situation to continue.
One of the very few things the Senate didn't discuss in depth was its own ineffectuality. Uncomfortable silence surrounded Lady Carice, but it was a silence she intended to use.
We cannot wait for Mon Mothma's return to take action. She saved this galaxy once from the dangers of oppression. We must now save ourselves from the dangers of weakness. Therefore, I wish to make a proposition, one that some here will consider radical.
She let her gaze focus on that populist rabble-rouser Varish Vickley, but only for a moment.
Others may believe it does not go far enough. But after due consideration and input from the people, I remain certain that my fellow senators will agree that this is by far the best way to restore our government to vitality. Gentle beings, we must lead again. And in order to do that, we need a leader.
How she had fought to be the one to make this statement. Her allies in the Senate had been hungry for this glory as well. But she had won, and this was her moment.
I hereby propose the abolition of the title Chancellor. In its stead, we will elect a first senator. And that first senator will be given real authority over economic and military matters. Our troops and politicians will be answerable again. The Senate will have to cooperate.
Lady Carice brought her hand up in a fist.
And we can finally move the New Republic forward.
One moment of silence, and then pandemonium.
This is treason! High treason against the core values of the New Republic!
How do we know the title of First Senator won't prove just as ineffectual as the title of Chancellor?
We would have to redraw that entire section of the New Republic's constitution.
What if the first senator turns into another emperor?
Lady Carice answered that question immediately.
When we redraw the constitution, we can define the first senator's authority and safeguard against tyranny.
Can you?
This came from Princess Leia, whose cheeks were flushed.
Need I remind the honorable members that Palpatine maintained the illusion of the Imperial Senate for nearly 20 years after the Old Republic's fall? A tyrant can make anything seem to be the will of the people.
Lady Carice held up her hands. The mediator droids obeyed her signal, silencing all the other senators whether they liked it or not. She felt as if she could almost drink the energy swirling in the room, an intoxicating mixture of fury and zeal.
Honorable members, I do not expect this transition to be an easy one, nor do I expect a vote to be held today. What I request is only that the Senate study my proposal seriously and come up with a plan that would allow us to elect a first senator at some point within this term.
There. She knew, of course, that the arguments over this would go on for ages. The Senate accomplished nothing quickly, least of all its own improvement. But the idea of finally choosing a powerful leader had been introduced. She, Lady Carice Sindian, had been the one to introduce it. They would remember that someday. School children would learn her name.
One of the mediator droids intoned.
The floor now recognizes the Honorable Senator from Ryosa, Ransom Casterfo.
Lady Carice would have expected Casterfo to look crestfallen after his failure with the Rinriven Dai investigation. But instead, he stood proudly, hands clasped behind his back. Gentle beings, this is not the time for debate. Frankly, debate is what is killing this Senate. A smattering of applause and chirps welcomed this. Frustration might have been the most commonly held feeling in the Galactic Senate. Casterfo continued. If we continue to table every discussion worthy of being had, continue to delay every motion that could make a difference, we will only sink ourselves deeper and deeper into the bureaucratic mire that now defines the New Republic. We are failing to lead our citizens. We are becoming a joke. Silence met this, but it was the silence of assent. Lady Carice's cheeks burned as she remembered some of the vulgar humor at the Senate's expense she'd heard in spaceports and such. At least she had a noble title still worthy of honor, one no government could ever take away. What Lady Carice has proposed is radical, yes, Casterfo continued. He had warmed to his subject, and the electricity in his voice had begun to galvanize the crowd. That does not make it wrong. I, for one, believe that this Senate does need more authoritative leadership. Others will not. For many of us, no amount of debate will ever change our minds. So I move that we vote now. Here, today. Let us see where the majority stands. Let us stand up and say precisely what we believe and act on that belief. If the vote is no, then we do not waste further time and acrimony on the matter. But if the vote is yes, if others among you are hungry for decisive leadership again, then we can spend our energy where it truly belongs, on determining the best way to define and elect our first senator. The applause returned, louder this time. Lady Carice felt as if the spotlight had shifted to Casterfo entirely. Jealousy prickled at her, but she forced it back. If the centrists could gain a vote on this question today, regardless of the outcome, that had to count as a victory. Even raising the idea of a first senator would start the conversation among the peoples of the galaxy, readying them for future unity and greatness. Besides, Casterfo was proving himself to be a worthy ally, a talent worth cultivating. I call for the vote! Casterfo's blue eyes were bright, his form silhouetted by the chamber's lights. He looked like a heroic figure on a poster or in a propaganda holo. These images would no doubt be transmitted later. Here and now, stop debating. Stop questioning. Don't worry about the details of the procedure, which can be determined later. Only say whether or not you are ready for this Senate to finally move forward again.
Opposition to the vote?
The moderator droid said flatly. Lady Carice knew most populists would object immediately, but it was very difficult to avoid a vote on the Senate floor. The government was structured to let everyone have a say, always, which was finally working to centrist advantage. Calling a vote was one thing. Winning it was another.
We haven't had time to make people see the benefits of strong leadership, she thought. The people remain afraid of Palpatine's shadow.
Yet as the objections to a vote failed to reach veto status and the preparations began, Lady Carice realized Casterfo's true brilliance. He hadn't couched his argument in terms of accepting a first senator. Instead, he had emphasized the frustration everyone felt about the Senate's inertia. Casterfo hadn't asked them to vote for anything, only to vote against a despised, deadlocked bureaucracy. The votes began to tally on the view screen floating above, each individual anonymous, but guessable. The nay votes of the populists lit up in green, while the yay votes of the centrists went yellow. Normally, the planets not committed to any one faction either split roughly half and half or abstained completely. This time, however, the yellow marks on the board multiplied until they cast a golden glow. Lady Carice stared into the light, her hand over her heart.
She and Casterfo would share the credit for this, and there would be more than enough credit to share. When he caught her eye through the hollows, he was smiling, and she grinned back. By now, they both knew. Through the many speakers and translators came the final result.
The motion carries.
Leia generally refused strong drink at functions with her fellow senators, even purely social ones. That night, when the droid asked what she wanted, she ordered a Corellian brandy.
And make it a double.
One vote, and our entire system of government is wrecked?
Varish Vickley used her claws to pull her golden fur back from her scowling face.
How could that happen?
It happened because our government is designed to be flexible, Leia pointed out, as she took her seat at Varish's long enameled table. We didn't want to be rigid. We wanted to bend. Well, we just bent so far we broke. She and several other populist senators had been invited to this dinner several days earlier. Leia had looked forward to the party, not only for the rich banquet that would be presented, but also because she had intended to begin informing her colleagues of her plans to leave the Senate at the end of her term. Instead, they would spend the whole evening grappling with the political disaster that had just befallen them.
But how could virtually all the neutral worlds turn against us like that?
Varish snapped her fingers. Lonerans could snap 8 of them at once.
I wouldn't have thought it was possible.
Tylin Gar settled himself onto the long cushions that lined Varish's table, just next to Leia. As a native of Gatalenta, he came across as calmer and steadier than anyone else in the Senate. But today's vote had clearly shaken him badly.
Lady Carice convinced no one. Casterfo convinced nearly everyone.
He got up there and pretended to cooperate with Leia, then sold out the whole galaxy. That power-hungry snake. No offense,
Varish added as she waved at a Philithar at the other end of the table. The Philithar hissed that none was taken. Leia shook her head. Casterfo's sincere. Wrong, but sincere. He's also convincing, and he has charm to spare. If the centrists can muster up a few more speakers like him, or even a candidate, we could be in serious trouble. Groans and curses filled the room, and the droids began hurrying out the second round of drinks. Most senators kept relatively modest homes on Hosnian Prime. Even Leia, who had no other primary residence, lived in a simple but comfortable apartment close to the main governmental buildings. However, Lonerans believed in opulence as a virtue unto itself, which meant Varish Vickley's suite of rooms was at least 4 times larger than most people's living spaces. Despite the almost outrageous level of luxury she maintained, abstract artwork blazing across the walls in vibrant color and crystal arrays hanging from the lights, Varish's home created a sense of welcome and comfort that almost always put visitors at ease, something they all needed tonight. Yet Leia couldn't relax. She found herself thinking of her mother, the birth mother she hadn't known, Padme Amidala. After Leia had learned her mother's identity years ago, she'd done what research she could to discover something more about the former queen and senator. She'd learned that her mother had been present at the vote that had given Palpatine ultimate power over the old Galactic Senate, and Leia could imagine the despair that must have been within her heart. Is that happening again today? My mother watched the old Republic fall. Is it my turn to see the new Republic crumble? Leia took another gulp of brandy. Ty Lin sat up and straightened his scarlet robe.
We cannot now avoid the election of a first senator. All we can do is make sure that the first senator will be a populist to ensure that this power won't be misused.
Murmurs of assent went down the table, and Leia found herself nodding. No other solution existed. Varish cocked her head, golden fur spilling over one shoulder.
Are you nominating yourself, Tylin? Not a bad idea.
I have a better one, Tylin smiled. Our candidate must be more than a trusted long-term senator. She must also be someone known throughout the galaxy. Someone whose friends and family are famed for their contributions to the New Republic. A war hero not even the centrists can accuse of being weak. Leia's eyes widened. Oh no. Varish clapped her furry hands together.
Of course! The first senator of the New Republic must be Princess Leia!
Damn. Chapter 10.
But that's amazing!
Greer smiled as she set down her datapad, surprised out of professional mode by Princess Leia's revelation.
You'd be a wonderful first senator.
You'd win for sure, Your Highness.
Corey hugged her datapad to her chest. Exciting stuff for a girl of 16, finding out she might be working for the person on the verge of becoming the most powerful individual in the galaxy. But Greer couldn't be condescending about Corey's glee when they were equally thrilled. Politics didn't offer enough excitement usually, but this? A race for first senator would be nearly as good as a race in a starfighter. Not quite, but almost. As much excitement as Greer could handle, anyway.
How very marvelous, C-3PO said. When will the election be scheduled?
Princess Leia only shook her head at them before leaning back in her office chair. I told you guys already. When my term is up, I want to resign. Greer wanted to protest, but didn't dare. Fortunately, what C-3PO lacked in tact, he made up for in enthusiasm.
But Your Highness, you mustn't resign. Not now, when the galaxy needs you.
3PO's right.
Greer wondered if those words had ever passed her lips before.
You're probably the strongest candidate the populists could field. That makes you our best chance of winning. If a centrist wins the election instead, bad things could happen.
Which was a weak way of putting things, and Greer knew it. But speaking the truth out loud meant saying words like war and tyranny. She didn't want to drag the conversation there if it wasn't necessary. Surely it wouldn't be. Princess Leia had to listen to reason, right? Leia sighed as she got to her feet and walked to the window of her office. The view revealed little beyond shrubs and the reddish footpaths outside the senatorial complex, but at least it let the light in. If it hadn't, Greer would have found the office too claustrophobic to endure. Sometimes she missed the sky. Our mission to Bastatha reminded me of what it felt like to be in action during the rebellion, Leia said without turning from the window. To know your entire life depended on your speed and your courage and the blaster in your hand.
How terrible. Those were indeed frightening days, Your Highness.
But wonderful, too. Leia looked over her shoulder, not at C-3PO, but at Greer and Corey, whom she probably hoped would understand. I miss being hands-on. I miss dealing with problems personally. I miss talking to pilots and soldiers instead of politicians all the time. I miss feeling like... No, I miss knowing that what I was doing really mattered. Greer had imagined herself in the Rebel Alliance before, playing X-Wing pilot as a little girl and pretending to blow up the Death Stars, sometimes both of them at once. But of course, that was how a child thought of war, as a great adventure where the good always won and the evil died without shedding real blood. To hear Princess Leia, who had suffered unspeakable tragedy and danger throughout the war, speaking of those days with nostalgia? Maybe it was the ultimate testimony to just how bad the Galactic Senate had become. If the Senate was collapsing, however, Greer knew who she wanted to remain standing at the end.
You could at least continue the Rin Riven Dye investigation,
Greer ventured.
The Senate would probably give you even more latitude. The populists, because they want you to shine. The centrists, because they want you to screw up.
Leia groaned and laughed as she returned to her desk.
No doubt.
Encouraged, Greer continued.
So it's not like you'd have to give up being in action forever. And if you were first senator, you could work around the bureaucracy you've hated so long. It wouldn't be the same as just staying in. Everything would change.
Everything will change with or without me, Leia pointed out. Greer nodded.
But with you, we have a chance to change for the better.
Princess Leia had a way of looking at people, as if she could see straight through them to the bone. She was a hard person to lie to, a harder person to convince. Yet the only terrible secret Greer kept was one the princess knew and kept for her. When Princess Leia fixed Greer in that stare, it wasn't a prelude to an investigation, but her way of calling for absolute, total honesty. What would you do if you were me? Excitement and freedom versus duty and purpose. Greer had made that call once. Princess Leia was, in effect, asking her if she regretted it.
I'd stay.
Greer lifted her chin.
I'd run, and I'd win.
The princess leaned back in her chair, deep in thought. They'd worked together long enough for Greer to know what that meant. She hadn't chosen to remain yet, but she was no longer resolved to leave. An exploratory committee, Princess Leia finally said. Just to consider the possibilities. I'll agree to that much.
How splendid,
chirped C-3PO. Corey grinned as she got to work pulling up potential names for the committee. They both thought the debate was over and that they were on the verge of the most exciting political campaign in 30 years. Greer knew only that, for the first time, she had lied to Leia Organa. Some regrets could never be spoken aloud.
Told you. You're never going to leave.
Han shook his head and smiled as if to say,
See? I'm always right.
His cocksure grin would have fooled most people. Leia, however, could sense his disappointment, and it was harder to bear than her own. I don't want this, she said. You know I don't.
Of course not. That's why you're putting together the, what's it, exploratory committee?
She shook her head. Han, the only thing worse than my becoming first senator would be a centrist becoming first senator. If I walk away now, I could be handing the galaxy over to the next emperor. You know I can't do that. After a moment, Han sighed.
I know.
Political news spread fast. As soon as Leia had told her staff to set up the exploratory committee, she had put in a comm request to Theron. If her husband had heard news this significant from a broadcast of some kind, it would have been terrible. Telling him herself? Still not good. Han had turned out to be on whatever ship he was flying on Theron, literally waist-deep in the wiring on the black-tiled wing with his tools lying around him. He'd pushed his safety goggles up to his forehead so that his gray-white hair stuck up in front. In the background, both droids and mechanics kept working hard, doing something complicated to the ship's rear engines.
Repairs? She asked, hoping to leaven the conversation.
I didn't think you would even have started flying in the rounds. The early heats of the Sabres competition could be supervised from platforms on the ground. Flight surveillance didn't begin until the lunar relays.
This?
Han shrugged as if it were nothing, but already he'd begun to smile again.
Actually, thought I might soup this baby up before I take her out again. Give her a little fighting power and see how far I can push the engines. She's a good ship, fast, handles well, but she needs that little something extra.
Han had said virtually the same thing about every ship he'd flown since the Millennium Falcon. He kept hoping to recreate that magic. But Leia knew he never would. No matter how much speed or maneuverability any other spacecraft might have. Some loves came only once in a lifetime.
The work would be going better if I didn't have to deal with a rookie crew,
he continued.
If I still had Greer on my team, we'd be finished by now.
I'll tell her you said so.
She doing okay?
Han frowned in genuine concern. I think so. Greer's more excited about the political campaign than I am. Leia smiled ruefully. Which isn't saying that much, really. But still.
Well, tell her hello from me.
This was Leia's cue to ask whether Han had heard from Ben or Luke, though she knew he wouldn't have, or to inquire about how Chewbacca was doing. Their conversation would trail off into something simpler and easier, and they could both pretend everything was all right. But it was important to be honest at moments like this, even if it was hard. Han, I'm sorry about the campaign. I really wanted something different for us. She thought of her daydreams about the two of them flying through the galaxy together, carefree at last. Already, those dreams were fading to shadows. But nothing ever changes.
Hey.
Han looked up from his work, more solemn than he'd been at any other point in the conversation.
Don't apologize to me for taking this seriously, okay? You put duty first. Drives me crazy sometimes, but that's who you are. It's also probably why the New Republic is still in one piece.
Leia couldn't quite smile. Someday.
Someday.
The words sounded like a promise. But Leia couldn't make herself believe that day would ever really come. And she knew Han couldn't either. Someday was the sun disappearing behind a cloud. A morning lost to darkness long before night should have come. Lady Carice Sindian walked through the hallways of the senatorial complex, her pink cloak rippling behind her as if in a breeze. She paced herself for speed and disdained the moving sidewalks that ferried around so many other senators. Passivity was a habit Lady Carice did not intend to acquire. The past day had been one of her greatest triumphs. So far, she thought. Yet victory demanded more of a person than defeat did. Instead of exulting in the successful vote, Lady Carice had spent hour upon hour receiving calls from countless centrist senators, balancing them in such a way as to show favor to the most important without alienating the others. To her surprise and relief, Senator Casterfo had obeyed protocol by promptly coming to her offices. Had she been in his place, would she have been as quick to cede the main credit for the vote? Certainly not. But Casterfo understood the importance of authority, which meant understanding the need for hierarchy. That made him an asset rather than a threat. Lady Carice had summoned him back to her offices only an hour before to suggest that they attend the gatherings of potential centrist candidates together, the better to avoid even a hint of factionalism. Casterfo had agreed to everything, had even been quite charming, until the moment she had called their meeting to a close and explained why.
Going to see Senator Organa?
Casterfo had smiled as if they were discussing a mutual friend.
I imagine she's not best pleased with me today, but do give her my regards.
Ransom Casterfo cannot be such a fool as to think he could make a friend of a populist senator,
Lady Carice thought as she passed under the shadow of Bail Organa's statue, scattering a flock of Toydarians that had been dawdling ahead of her.
Nor should he assume the princess is naive enough to take his pleasantries at face value. So what game is he playing?
It bore further observation. However, Lady Carice set the matter aside for now. She was visiting Princess Leia not as a fellow senator, but as a fellow sister of one of the elder houses, which deserved its own weight and importance. After the princess's doddering protocol droid had seen her in, Lady Carice took her seat before Leia's desk, folding her hands in her lap.
You must realize why I'm here.
Princess Leia shook her head. She wore a plain gray dress more befitting a commoner than a senator. I'm afraid you have me at a loss, Lady Carice, unless this is about yesterday's vote.
Of course not. No politics today.
Lady Carice beamed.
You and I have the luxury of considering more high-minded issues, don't we?
Instead of responding, the princess stared at Lady Carice in what seemed to be total incomprehension. Was she well? Possibly senility had begun to set in. Of course, Princess Leia was rather young for such troubles, but one never knew. With what she considered gracious good manners, Lady Carice did not force the princess to guess.
I wished to discuss the governorship of Beeren. Your staff must have been researching the matter for weeks now. When will you be traveling there for your inauguration?
Oh, yes. Right. Princess Leia acted as if she hadn't thought about the matter once since their last discussion. How disingenuous. You know, Lady Carice, I'm not actually of the bloodlines of any of the Elder Houses. Bail and Breha Organa adopted me.
You were a war orphan.
Lady Carice had always found this story extraordinarily touching.
And yet they raised you as their own. Through their actions, the Organas showed that nobility is not merely a matter of blood.
Princess Leia smiled at the kind mention of her parents. My point is, I shouldn't be the person inheriting the governorship of Beeren in the first place.
But of course you should. None of the Elder Houses adjudicates succession through strict bloodline inheritance.
Privately, Lady Carice held some reservations about this. Bloodlines had to matter somewhat, otherwise the very concept of royalty would be discounted. However, she believed that inner nobility could be demonstrated through action. And despite her political disagreements with the princess, Lady Carice felt nobody could deny Leia's courage was the equal of any monarch's.
You must succeed, Lord Meluin, just as your son must someday succeed you.
For a moment, Princess Leia looked weary, as if she had aged between one sentence and the next. I can't see Ben taking much interest in the governorship either. Really, it would be better for everyone concerned if I were to remove myself from the succession. Wouldn't it then fall to you? Beeren was settled by both Alderaanian and Arcanisian explorers, after all. Lady Carice managed to reveal no reaction beyond surprise. Inside, however, she felt as if every firework from the dedication ceremony had exploded again in the sky above, even brighter than before.
She's giving it to me. To me. A planetary title of my very own. My standing in the Elder Houses would rise immeasurably overnight.
But her dedication to the nobility remained even stronger than her ambition.
Princess Leia, you do me great honor by even suggesting it, yet I could not possibly usurp your throne.
You're not usurping it if I'm giving it to you. Princess Leia waved her hand as if shooing something off. Honestly, I can't see the point of spending weeks away from the Senate just to claim an honorary throne nobody else cares about filling, not even the people of Beeren. If you don't take the governorship, I'll send an emissary there to see about officially abolishing the position. But if you're willing to take it and the citizens don't object, please, Lady Carice, be my guest.
Thank you.
Lady Carice could no longer keep her smile inside, and she beamed at the princess.
I promise that you will be proud of my service as Supreme Governor.
Princess Leia smiled back, but crookedly. See? Now everyone's happy.
Of course, I'll travel to Beeren immediately. It's so important for someone to be hands-on.
The phrase seemed to strike Princess Leia strongly. She straightened as her gaze sharpened back to full intensity, as if she had only just woken. I agree completely. For most of the next half hour, Lady Carice felt as if she were floating on a cloud of delight. But as she strolled back toward her own offices, head filled with thoughts of herself in a golden gown to match her throne, it suddenly hit her. Weeks away from the Senate. Spending that much time on Beeren now, at such a critical point, with the candidates for first senator likely to announce themselves within the month, could she possibly afford it? Was she sacrificing her real work as a senator for the sake of the supreme governorship of Beeren? She would simply have to find balance. Duty demanded that she fulfill both of her roles to the best of her ability. The winds of politics shifted by the day, but nobility was forever. Joff had meant to take only a short nap, but instead he'd nearly blown through his whole downshift. He swore when he saw the time and dashed to the hangar, where a dozen or so other X-Wing pilots had gathered around a holotransmitter.
Did they start?
He shouted as he ran toward them. Temin Wexley, a.k.a. Snap, gestured for Joff to join the group.
About to. Move your boots, Sea Striker.
The second Saber's run was about to begin. Orbital sprints. While the final three stages of the five Sabers were best watched through edited footage later, because they lasted hours, then days, then weeks, the first two were the best racing you could watch. Joff had shouted himself hoarse, cheering on the pilots in the initial starfighter atmospheric dash, and he expected the orbital sprints to be just as exciting. More, even, because only after the second race could you begin to identify potential winners. Joff hurried toward the group, but paused as he saw one pilot working on her ship without even glancing at the races.
Greer?
She glanced over at him from her place beneath the mirror bright. The sleeves of her grease-stained jumpsuit were pushed above her elbows.
Hey, Joff.
Aren't you going to watch?
Nah.
Greer shrugged with one shoulder and bent closer to her work. The glow of her handheld scanner etched her profile in the hangar's shadows.
But one time you won the Sabres.
Exactly. Been there, done that.
Greer didn't look away from the mirror bright again. Not even once.
Anyway, I only won the junior Sabres.
Which was still completely awesome. Joff opened his mouth to protest, but in a rare flash of tact, realized it might be smarter not to say anything. The thing was, Greer had another job back in the Senate offices. Given the maintenance she'd run on the Mirror Bright right after their mission to Bastatha, the ship couldn't possibly need any more work done. So Greer had come here without any real need, knowing the other pilots would be watching the Sabres. She wanted to watch. She just wasn't allowing herself to do it. Joff loped toward the others and accepted a cup of the engine room jet juice, which burned going down, but lit you up pretty quick. Even as he settled in to watch, though, he couldn't keep himself from glancing over at Greer.
Is she doing this to punish herself? He wondered. If so, for what? Or does she figure it doesn't count if she just listens to the Sabres run?
Looks like a good race today, Senator Organa said from behind them, which made all the pilots straighten at once. Joff turned with the others to see her standing there in a dark blue jacket and trousers, a smile on her face. Although she couldn't have missed the group's consternation, the senator acted as if she hung out in the hangar all the time.
What's that in the jug?
Oh, this?
Wexley's broad, bearded face turned red. He swallowed hard before venturing,
It's Kath. Definitely. So we can stay alert on duty, ma'am.
Too bad. The senator folded her arms as she leaned against the nearest X-wing. In my day, starfighter pilots knew how to brew quality hooch. In the following pause, several of the pilots began to smile. Snap ventured,
Would you believe that this calf happens to taste a whole lot like that? With, similar effects.
She grinned and held out one hand.
Let me be the judge.
Somebody had the good sense to offer the senator one of the chairs, and before long she was in the heart of the gathering, talking with them about the Sabres like she was just another pilot.
Don't count out the team from Sullust, she confided as everyone settled in. They didn't do much on the starfighter round, but they shine at longer distances. Trust me, I know a guy.
People chuckled at the reference to Captain Solo. From the corner of his eye, Joff saw Greer drawing closer. When the senator waved her forward, Greer joined them at last, still averting her eyes from the hollow, but accepting a cup of jet juice and at least starting to smile. Was this all about getting Greer to watch the race? Joff wondered. He sensed it wasn't, but Senator Organa was doing something besides just hanging out for the races. That much he knew for sure.
I hear the team from Pamarth is likely to be a contender too, Leia said. Of course they are, Joff said. They always are. Everybody knows that if you're from Pamarth, you're good at flying, fighting, or...
He realized he shouldn't finish that phrase just in time. Anyway, everybody understood without him saying it. For generations, Pamarthans had enjoyed a reputation for courage, skill, and... gusto. Senator Organa gave no sign she'd noticed Joff's careful omission.
Are you rooting for the home team, Greer?
I don't have to.
Greer finally cracked a smile.
They'll win with or without me.
She was from Pamarth? And she worked in an office? Joff always thought of Pamarthans as tromping around in their fields, working on their ships, or guzzling tankards of ale. Which was ridiculous, because of course they couldn't do that all the time, even though most people from Pamarth seemed committed to trying. It was hard to imagine one of them handling senatorial bureaucracy with ease. The race began, as did the cheering from the pilots, but Joff remained quiet, listening to the senator and Greer. So many people recruit pilots from Pamarth, Princess Leia said quietly, her words almost lost in the din. Particularly in that area of the Outer Rim, so close to Daxam 4. Neighboring worlds recruit Pamarth's flyers for racing, for the military, for all sorts of things. Daxam 4. Joff had been privy to enough mission data to know Daxam 4 was somehow connected to Rin Riven Dai. Greer got the message, nodding slowly.
I really should go back for a visit sometime soon. It's been a while.
You're sure you can handle it?
Of course I can. It's home. I know exactly where to go.
A mission? This is a mission. Greer's going to find out whether Rin Riven Dai's hiring pilots from Pamarth. Envy and excitement prodded Joff to blurt out,
You know, I always wanted to see Pamarth.
Both the senator and Greer stared at him, which was the first moment Joff realized he'd been eavesdropping. And on a conversation about a secret mission, which was probably bad. Definitely bad. When was he ever going to learn to keep his mouth shut? But then Senator Organa nodded. I think that if I check with your superior officers, we'll find you're due for some time off, Lieutenant Sea Striker. Greer, you wouldn't mind having a little company, would you? Joff took a deep sip of his drink to hide his excited smile. A secret mission? Now that was more like it. Chapter 11. Pamarth's rugged islands clung close to one another in the vast, choppy ocean that covered much of its surface. Despite the modern spaceports carved into the basalt cliffs and the array of sturdy small craft that flew and floated among the islands daily, the Pamarthans maintained many of the old bridges of wood, stone, and rope, restoring them as needed without ever replacing them. They said this was to make sure their people still had courage. Privately, Greer thought they just wanted to scare offworlders. Anyway, it worked on Joff Sea Striker. This goes on for another kilometer? Joff said, both hands gripping the rope railings on either side. His gaze darted down to the swirling water far below. What sadist built this bridge in the first place?
A true Pamarthan.
Greer used her grandparents' thick accent, letting the burr of it settle in around the R's. She drew her woolen drape over her head and tucked it in more securely around her neck amid the swaddle of robes and wraps her people wore on her homeworld.
Which is what you're pretending to be, remember? If you show up at the cantina pale and queasy, you'll blow our cover in a heartbeat.
Joff gulped.
I don't think I can help the queasy part.
Then just keep moving. Get a flush in your cheeks.
The kid's skin was nearly as pale as Princess Leia's, which would mark his family as relative newcomers to her world. But that could be generations back. And the island they were walking to lay at the far northern tip of the archipelago, where most such newcomers had settled.
Besides, the faster you get to the next terminal, the sooner you can take a break.
Okay.
Joff took a deep breath, eased his grip on the ropes, and started moving forward. Although the bridge swayed beneath his feet, he resolutely kept going. The same heavy woolens that Greer wore so easily made him look half as broad as he was tall.
Why didn't we just land on this island instead of the other one?
We restrict landings here. To keep out the invaders, who haven't shown up in about 300 years.
Greer shook her head. Sometimes she thought the local clans were still hoping for villains to come running over the next hill, spoiling for an old-fashioned sword fight.
I guess it works, Joff said. Nobody would ever invade this place if they knew it meant crossing these bridges all the time.
You fly a starfighter. How can you be afraid of heights?
When I'm in a starfighter, I'm in control. Piloting a ship, I maintain myself, so I know it's as good as anything else that flies. Here? It looks like nobody's repaired one of these bridges in years. The ropes could give way any second.
His face paled as they swayed in the wind again. Amused despite herself, Greer said,
I thought you wanted excitement, Sea Striker.
I do. But my idea of excitement doesn't involve throwing up. At least, not until the day after.
Greer shook her head.
Hang in there.
To her, the rope bridge's sway felt almost comforting, like being a ship on the sea. Like most Pomarthans, Greer had had to learn how to handle watercraft before anyone would teach her how to fly.
If you cannot conquer the sea, you will never conquer the air.
That was what they all said. Some of the happiest moments of her young life had been spent on a boat, winching a sail into place, or looking for a good cove in which to anchor. At that moment, facing the wind and the sea spray, she felt good. Really good. Maybe she'd been too cautious lately. Greer turned forward again, gazing toward their destination. The island, half shrouded in fog, jutted up from the ocean as if defying the waves. When she saw the soft glow of lights from the coastline buildings, the sense of homecoming that swept over her was too powerful to deny. Just a couple hours' flight away, friends of her grandparents would be cooking enormous kettles of fish stew and coming together. If she were there, they would welcome her in a moment, smiles wide and arms wider.
You're not here for happy reunions,
she reminded herself.
And this only works if nobody recognizes you.
Fortunately, pilots were known more by ship than by face. When they walked down the steps into the old cantina, nobody who looked at Greer showed even a flicker of recognition, though Joff's pale blonde hair drew a couple of glances. They slid into an empty space at the end of one of the benches for the long tables, which was when the tavern keeper came over.
Haven't seen you two about before.
Been gone a while, Joff said.
His tone sounded casual enough to Greer, but the tavern keeper must not have liked what he heard. From his apron, he pulled a flask of something reddish amber that made the nearby patrons start to laugh. Port in a storm. Greer would have known it at 20 paces. The tavern keeper set a squat glass in front of Joff.
If you've been gone too long, you're not a real Pomarthan any longer. Gone soft, like an off-worlder?
Joff tried.
No, I... No? Best prove you've still got your tubies, then.
The tavern keeper poured a full glass of port in a storm, then scooted it in front of them.
Let me see you take that down.
He's just a kid. Leave this to me.
Greer reached past Joff to take the glass, tilted it back, and drank deep. The fire seemed to zoom to the top of her head and the core of her gut simultaneously, but she knew how to take it. Three gulps, and she was done. Greer smiled at the tavern keeper, turned the glass upside down, and banged it on the table.
How's that for chubies?
And that's a woman of Pomarth,
the tavern keeper yelled as cheers filled the room. Just like that, they were accepted. After a few congratulations and handshakes, the hubbub faded, and Greer and Joff were only two among dozens of hardened pilots and fighters, waiting for their next tankard of ale. The chatter flowed freely, unchecked by suspicion.
Too many patrols around Kessel these days. Might as well put a net over the whole planet and be done with it.
Mark my words. The whole Imperial fleet is out there, just biding their time. Mark my words. We've not seen the last of them.
And then he says, I don't care if you like my friends. And I say, well, you share all your opinions about my friends. And he says,
could you believe the Sullust team took the orbitals?
Greer barely glanced over as she interjected,
word on the ground has it Sullust's the one to beat this year.
Sullust? Get on with ye. They'll be sent home crying by the Coruscant team.
And our team? You'll count the Pamarthans out already?
After the way they fell apart at the orbitals? They've no chance any longer. Flew like a pack of off-worlders.
So the conversation went, swirling and eddying all around them. Greer spoke up often enough for it to seem natural, no more, and otherwise kept listening intently without appearing to listen at all. She'd learned how to do this with senators. She could manage it with pilots, who had worse language than the politicians, but better manners. Joff got too involved in a conversation about Pi, a subject apparently very close to his heart, but that was harmless and distracting to those around them. Greer took it all in without reacting, until the moment a few hours in, when she heard the exact kind of thing they'd been listening for.
Not enough pilots who understand discretion these days.
Discretion?
She repeated, turning to the pilot who'd been speaking, a grizzled old woman who wore some of her smaller tools on leather cords around her neck. But the pilot had been doing this too long not to be wary.
What's it to you?
We're between jobs.
Greer nodded toward Joff, who turned out to be very good at looking innocent.
We're looking for work in this area, and we need money fast. So we're not asking too many questions. If anyone asked us questions...
Joff finished for her.
We wouldn't answer.
There's work to be had,
the pilot said. Her milky blue eyes studied them, looking for signs of trouble, and apparently finding none.
That is, if you've got a good ship and the nerve.
Nerve? Listen, we've got...
Joff's indignation was easily silenced by Greer patting him on one shoulder. His performance was so convincing that not even she realized he was faking it until he settled down again easily. Greer leaned closer to the pilot.
Listen, we could really use a good run or two. If you've got any leads, we'd appreciate them. Risk is no object.
The pilot shrugged, perhaps deciding that if they weren't what they seemed, it was someone else's problem.
Lots of runs to and from Daxum 4 these days. They pay well for speed and silence. Quick money to be made there if you've got the nerve. Slide into orbit and signal the central hangars. Seems like the Amaxines have some sources there to tell them about passing cargo ships. Chances are, you'll get a call about a job before you've got time to take off your flight suits.
Daxum 4, Joff repeated with a grin. They'd hit the jackpot.
Thanks, ma'am. You have no idea how much you've helped.
Although the pilot seemed pleased to be thanked, she made a scoffing sound.
Thank me after you've dealt with the Amaxines. Not before.
Greer and Joff exchanged looks. The Amaxines. The pilot chuckled as she lifted her ale.
You'll see.
Greer had successfully shifted the conversation to other topics and had made sure to remain in place for a good while after the old pilot departed. This meant drinking more ale, and while she and Joff were careful to pace themselves, by the time they walked out of the cantina, dawn had begun to lighten the eastern horizon. But it was still only a faint, pale line near the line of the sea. Joff walked onto the bridge without hesitation. Liquid courage seemed to help him. Greer followed along, looking down without fear at the waves breaking white against the stony coastline. Although she didn't turn around, Her ears were sharp enough to know that they weren't being followed. Another good thing about these rope bridges, they remained resolutely low-tech, meaning there would be no record of their visit here. They would be able to fly out clean, unnoticed, and with a promising lead.
I could have drunk that stuff, he insisted.
I'll bring you a bottle sometime and let you try. But trust me on this. We didn't want our whole mission riding on your first taste of port in a storm.
Fine, then. He sighed. Hey, can I ask you something?
Of course. But there's no guarantee I'll answer.
Greer said it lightly, assuming he just wanted some distraction from the pitch and roll of the rope bridge.
How come Senator Organa asked you about this in the hangar? You're her assistant. She could have brought it up at work.
Greer had understood this from the moment Princess Leia had first spoken.
The senatorial oath demands a promise that they will not use the Senate offices for purposes of espionage. Probably the oath means office more in terms of the senator's overall position, less in terms of the actual room where political business is done. But the oath doesn't specify that. So if Princess Leia is ever asked whether she violated her oath, she can truthfully promise no. On a technicality.
Joff turned to grin at her, open-mouthed.
We're involved in espionage!
Only if you don't keep saying it out loud.
He mouthed espionage again before adding,
Wait, why isn't it, you know, just like Bastatha?
The Senate authorized that. They didn't authorize this.
Unauthorized. I like how that sounds. Now this is more like it.
Joff started forward again, then made the mistake of looking down.
Oh, brother. Is the bridge... Did it get higher while we ate?
No, but the tide's going out, so you'd have farther to fall.
When Joff blanched, Greer laughed and took his arm.
Come on, walk faster. I've got you.
When a wave of dizziness washed over her, too, she ignored it and kept going. Probably just the port in a storm.
If being the populist candidate is half as irritating as being suspected of being the next populist candidate, Leia decided, this campaign is going to be unbearable. She doubted Tylin Gar or any of the other senators at Varish's home that night had spoken a word to a soul beyond their closest advisors. They didn't have to. Tylin had been correct when he said that Leia was the obvious candidate. Everyone had seen this coming except Leia herself.
Your Highness?
C-3PO came shuffling into her office.
Yet more visitors. We have leaders from the Association of Small Craft Manufacturers. Eager to see you.
Leia looked up from her list of communiques, which was at least 3 times longer than usual. Did they give any particular reason?
Why, no, Your Highness. I would imagine it is normal lobbying activity, well within regulations.
The droid was never happier than when citing rules.
Therefore, it is highly appropriate for them to visit. Though I suppose the lack of an appointment is irregular. I could ask them to schedule...
Never mind, 3PO. Leia set her communiques aside for the moment. Show them in.
Right away, Your Highness.
3PO chirped as he shuffled back into her main office. At least the droid's enjoying this, she thought. Someone ought to. Leia made polite small talk with the small craft manufacturers, then with the ore traders of GAD, then with a group of junior senators from populist worlds on the Outer Rim. None of them could yet come out and say that they were hoping for her favor if she was elected first senator. They could, however, hint at the kinds of campaign promises they thought would make that election more likely. Unsurprisingly, all these promises benefited her visitors' pocketbooks. She forced herself to think of Ty Lin, whose intentions in nominating her she knew to be pure. If Leia was obliged to run for first senator, she intended to win. And if she won, she intended to do the job well. Setting the right precedent would be important. A few years of strong, disinterested, fair leadership might finally show the people how government ought to be run.